Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
After more than 30 years working funerals, he had learned there were certain conversations families only had around death. Most people did not bring them up immediately. At first, they talked about practical things, flowers, clothing, which relatives were traveling in from out of state, and whether the church fellowship hall would hold enough people after the service. But eventually, usually later in the evening after enough relatives had gone home and exhaustion started lowering people's guard, someone would quietly mention something strange. A dream, a voice, a clock stopping at the exact moment somebody died. As the funeral director, he heard stories like that for decades, and at first he dismissed most of them automatically. Grief affected people in unpredictable ways, especially during the days surrounding a death. People searched for meaning when somebody they loved disappeared suddenly from their lives, and the mind had a remarkable ability to create comfort when it needed to. At least that was what he told himself early in his career. But after enough years, patterns started becoming difficult to ignore. Not because the stories were dramatic, usually they were the opposite. Simple things repeated quietly by people who clearly felt embarrassed even mentioning them out loud. A woman insisting her dying husband spent his final hours talking to his brother, who passed 20 years earlier. Adult children hearing their mother say someone was standing in the corner of the hospice room waiting for her. Family members waking from vivid dreams moments before receiving late-night phone calls announcing a death. Different people, different churches, different backgrounds. But the stories repeated themselves often enough that eventually he stopped dismissing them quite so quickly. He never openly encouraged those conversations, though. Part of working around grief meant understanding how vulnerable people became after losing someone. The last thing he wanted was to sound like one of those television paranormal personalities looking for ghost stories everywhere. Most of the time, he simply listened politely while families talked themselves through whatever comfort they needed. Still, certain stories stayed with him longer than others, especially the ones that repeated later in ways they should not have. The farming family was one of those. He first met them after the wife passed unexpectedly from a stroke in her early 70s. The family was well known in the county because their farm had hosted gatherings for decades. Weddings, graduations, anniversaries, church picnics. Half the town had probably eaten at least one meal on that property over the years. The husband took the death especially hard. Not outwardly. He was not emotional in public and rarely spoke much during the arrangements. But the funeral director noticed the way the man constantly looked toward empty doorways during the visitation. Almost like part of him. Still expected his wife to walk into the room at any moment. After the funeral, life moved on the way it always did. Until about a month later when he received a phone call from the man's daughter-in-law. At first, she sounded hesitant, almost apologetic, and he assumed she was calling about paperwork or cemetery records. Instead, after several awkward moments, she asked whether he believed people could visit through dreams after they died. The question caught him slightly off guard. He gave the same careful answer he usually gave in those situations. Some people believed they could. Others thought grief simply created unusually vivid dreams after a loss. The woman grew quiet after that. and she explained why she asked. A few nights earlier, she had experienced what she insisted was not a normal dream. She said it felt different from the moment it started, sharper somehow, more real. She remembered details too clearly afterward for it to feel ordinary. In the dream, the entire family had gathered at the farmhouse again. Children ran through the yard while music drifted from somewhere outside near the barns. Folding tables covered with food stretched across the back lawn exactly the way they always had during holidays. Then she looked out the kitchen window and saw her mother-in-law walking calmly up the path toward the house. Not ghostly, not frightening, just there. The woman said she opened the door and watched her walk inside, smiling, before crossing the room toward her husband, who sat near the front window exactly where he usually spent his evenings. Then the woman sat beside him, took his hand, and told him something simple. "Don't worry about me. I'm happy, and I'm with people I haven't seen in years." The daughter-in-law admitted she almost did not share the dream with anyone because it felt strangely personal, like she had overheard a private conversation not intended for her. He remembered listening quietly while she described it. Honestly, stories like that were not unusual in his profession. Families often dreamed about loved ones shortly after funerals. Most eventually faded he into memory alongside the grief itself. But this story stayed with him because of what happened years later. By then, the husband's health had declined badly. Alzheimer's had taken most of him long before his body finally began failing too. Toward the end, his children rotated shifts, staying beside him at the farmhouse because nobody wanted him dying alone in a nursing facility. He received the call late one evening. The family said death was close and asked whether he could prepare to come sometime during the night. That itself was not unusual either. After decades in funeral service, he had learned families often sensed when someone was about to go, even before hospice officially confirmed it. He finished preparing paperwork at the funeral home that evening and eventually fell asleep in the small apartment above the chapel sometime after midnight. That was when he had the dream. The dream began at the farm. Not outside the house at first, but farther back near the equipment shed where guests usually parked during family gatherings. Late afternoon sunlight stretched across the fields in long golden bands, and music drifted faintly through the warm air somewhere near the house. Everything looked unusually vivid. That was the first thing he remembered afterward. Most dreams blurred around the edges once you woke up. Details disappeared almost immediately. But this felt startlingly clear from the moment it began, right down to the dust rising beneath his shoes as he walked across the gravel drive. Vehicles filled the parking area beside the barn exactly the way they always had during reunions and holidays. He recognized several of them too, old trucks belonging to relatives he vaguely remembered from the funeral years earlier. Cars parked crookedly along the grass near the fence line. Somebody laughing somewhere out behind the house. So the atmosphere felt peaceful, not strange or frightening, just familiar. Then he saw the husband. The old man came driving slowly across the property in a faded pickup truck, one hand resting casually out the open driver's side window the way farmers often drove on back roads. The truck stopped near the shed, and the man climbed out looking healthier than he had during the final years of his illness. Not younger exactly. Just clearer somehow. Present. He remembered noticing immediately that the confusion usually clouding the man's face was completely gone. The old man smiled when he saw him standing there and said something simple. "I came to pick up my wife," he said softly. That was all. No dramatic moment, no fear. Just a calm statement delivered as casually as somebody announcing they were leaving a party early. Then the man climbed back into the truck and drove slowly toward the farmhouse while music drifted through the warm evening air. He woke almost immediately afterward. For several long seconds, he simply lay in bed, staring at the dark ceiling above him while the dream settled uncomfortably into his thoughts. It felt wrong calling it a nightmare because nothing about it had been frightening, but it did not feel like an ordinary dream either. The details remained too sharp. Even afterward, he could still remember the exact color of the sunlight across the gravel and the sound of distant laughter somewhere near the house. Eventually, he checked the clock beside the bed. A little after 3 in the morning. For a moment, he considered calling the family immediately, though he quickly dismissed the idea. What exactly would he even say? That he had dreamed about a dying man driving across his farm looking for his wife? After decades around grieving families, he understood the difference between comforting people and burdening them unnecessarily. So he got out of bed, made coffee, and waited for morning. The call came shortly before sunrise, since the husband had passed quietly about 40 minutes earlier. Even then, he kept the dream to himself. He had spent too many years around emotional families to casually introduce something that personal into the middle of fresh grief. He convinced himself it was simply coincidence anyway. His mind had probably combined memories from the funeral years earlier with the expectation that death was coming soon. That explanation felt reasonable enough, at least initially. But when he arrived at the farmhouse later that morning, something happened that unsettled him far more than the dream itself. The daughter-in-law approached him privately near the kitchen while relatives filled the house around them. She looked pale and exhausted, though there was also something strangely distracted about her expression. Before he could ask whether she was all right, she quietly asked him a question. "Did anything unusual happen last night?" A heaviness settled into his stomach almost instantly. He asked what she meant. The woman hesitated before explaining that shortly before the husband died, several family members sitting with him heard him speaking softly toward the corner of the bedroom. At first, they assumed he was confused again because of the Alzheimer's. Then one of his daughters realized he was talking to his wife, not about her, to her. According to the family, the old man suddenly became clearer than he had been in months. He smiled toward the empty corner of the room and quietly told someone he was ready to go. Then he said one more thing. "Looks like the party's starting already." He did not tell her about the dream. Not then. Honestly, hearing her describe those final moments unsettled him enough that he mostly focused on his work the rest of the morning. Arrangements, paperwork, coordinating calls with the church and cemetery. Normal things. Practical things. Still, the dream stayed with him. Not because he suddenly believed he had experienced something supernatural, but because the details connected too closely to dismiss comfortably anymore. The farm, the gathering, the husband coming to get his wife, and now the strange final comment about a party beginning. For the first time in his career, he found himself wondering whether some of those stories families shared over the years might contain more truth than he had allowed himself to believe. He never became one of those people constantly searching for signs afterward. If anything, the experience made him quieter about the subject. But over the next several years, he started noticing similar patterns more carefully whenever families talked about unusual dreams or experiences near the end of someone's life. And once he truly began paying attention, he realized how often the same themes repeated themselves. People arriving to escort someone home, gatherings, reunions. The sense that the dying were not disappearing into something unknown, but returning somewhere familiar instead. Over time, the dream stopped feeling like an isolated experience and started becoming part of a much larger pattern he could no longer comfortably ignore. Not every family experienced something unusual before a death, of course. Most funerals remained exactly what people would expect them to be. Grief, logistics, exhaustion, and people trying to navigate terrible days as gracefully as possible. But certain experiences repeated themselves often enough that he quietly began paying attention, especially near the end. Hospice nurses occasionally mentioned patients speaking to deceased relatives shortly before passing. Family members sometimes described dying loved ones suddenly becoming alert after days of confusion, often insisting someone had come to visit them. A few claimed relatives described gatherings or parties waiting somewhere nearby. The details changed. The themes rarely did. As the funeral director, he still never openly encouraged those conversations. He understood how easily grief could influence people, and the last thing he wanted was to become someone feeding emotional stories back into vulnerable families. Still, he listened differently afterward, more carefully. Years passed before he finally told anyone about the dream at the farm. Even then, it happened almost accidentally. One winter evening after a visitation, he sat with a younger hospice nurse in the fellowship room beside the chapel while a snowstorm moved through town outside. They were both waiting for weather conditions to improve before driving home, and conversation eventually drifted toward the strange things people sometimes experienced near death. The nurse admitted she stopped trying to rationalize certain moments years earlier. She described patients speaking clearly to dead spouses moments before passing, despite being unconscious or heavily medicated for hours beforehand. One woman apparently smiled toward an empty doorway and asked whether everyone else could see the children standing there waiting for her. The nurse laughed nervously after telling the story, almost embarrassed by it. Then she asked whether he had ever experienced anything himself. For several seconds, he considered giving the polite answer he usually gave. Instead, he surprised himself by telling her about the farm. Not dramatically, not like a ghost story, just matter-of-factly. He explained the dream exactly as he remembered it. The old pickup truck, the music drifting across the property, the husband calmly announcing he had come to pick up his wife. When he finished, the nurse stayed quiet longer than he expected. Then she asked him something he had never fully considered before. What if people aren't hallucinating at the end? The question stayed with him long afterward. Not because he suddenly believed he understood what happened after death. If anything, decades around funerals taught him how little anyone really knew for certain. But he could no longer dismiss the possibility that dying people sometimes experienced something real, even if the living only caught brief glimpses of it around the edges. That idea changed him more than he liked admitting, not publicly. He still handled funerals the same way, still focused on practical things, still comforted families without turning grief into something theatrical or supernatural. But privately, he noticed death stopped frightening him quite as much afterward. Not because he thought he had answers. Because the fear of death often came from imagining people disappearing completely into nothing. And after enough years around the dying, he was no longer entirely convinced that was what happened. The strangest part came nearly a decade later. One afternoon, he received a handwritten letter from the daughter-in-law from the farming family. Inside was a brief note thanking him again for the kindness he showed during both funerals. But near the end of the letter, she included one final detail she admitted she had never shared with anyone outside the family. A few weeks after her father-in-law died, her young granddaughter apparently described seeing him standing outside near the barn one evening shortly before sunset. The child calmly told her mother that Grandpa was leaving because Grandma had finally come back for him. Then she said something else. She said the party was ready now. The little girl had been born years after her grandmother's death. Nobody in the family remembered ever discussing the old man's final words around her. Even after all those years, that detail unsettled him more than the dream itself. Not in a frightening way, just deeply strange. For the rest of his career, he rarely spoke about the experience unless someone asked directly. Even then, he usually softened the details or laughed them off halfway through the story. Part of him still resisted treating the dream like proof of anything supernatural. After all those years around grieving families, he understood too well how desperately people wanted reassurance that death was not simply an ending. But privately, the experience changed something in him. Not dramatically. He still approached funerals the same way. Still believed his job was to help the living more than the dead. Yet over the years, whenever frightened families quietly asked whether he thought their loved one was still with them somehow, he noticed he stopped giving careful non-answers. Instead, he usually told them the same thing, that after decades around death, he no longer believed people left this world completely alone. And every once in a while, usually while driving home after a late service or standing alone in the quiet funeral home after midnight, he still found himself thinking about the farm. The warm evening light stretching across the fields, music drifting somewhere through the summer air, and the strange sense that somewhere beyond what the living could fully understand, a family gathering had continued without interruption.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino. Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Modo Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Modo Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Modo Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Modo Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Modo Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Modo Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Modo Casino. Modo's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Modo, America's social casino. Play for free on Modo.us.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Modo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Modo is U.S. owned and operated. Modo, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Modo.us.
Modo Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Modo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Modo is U.S. owned and operated. Modo, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Modo.us.
Modo Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.